You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to a new season, not just a new season of the Vancouver Canucks, but a new season of the VanCast, Farhan Lalji, Thomas Drantz, and Harmon Dahl with you today. It's not always going to be the dream team, all three of us, but we're excited to get this one kicked off right now for the 2022-2023 Vancouver Canucks season. You saw the promo, Drantzer, you saw Harmon. You know, I'll be honest with you guys. When I had the idea to do this thing, I kept thinking of like early Harm, right? So early Harm, I mean, the guy's 24 years old. So I'm thinking of Harm when he was 20, first getting started in this thing, and he was the skinny little guy. And he shows up and he's kind of jacked. He's very jacked. He fit on a football field in a football setting, but there was no Drantzer. Why weren't you in the promo other than the maniacal laugh?
Well, I'm glad I wasn't, because I saw Lucky Whitehead take some shots at you guys on Twitter.
I'm
good at avoiding controversy. It's the old PR guy in me, Farhan.
Sorry, wait a minute. You're good at avoiding controversy. Clearly, we don't want you on the show anymore.
Yeah, and look, you know, a lot of people have been asking us, right? What's going on? What's going on with the VanCast? When's it coming back? I even got some of it in Penticton. People asking, "What's up with the VanCast, Drantzer?" So. We're going to explain ourselves, and we're going to chart a plan for this upcoming season, because I am stepping back a bit here, and you know, that's a work-life balance thing, but it's not goodbye, right? First of all, I reserve the right to rev back up if I find that I have the time to do so. But also, I love talking with you, Farhan. I love dealing with the VIPs. Everyone knows that I love dealing with Harm too. And so at least a couple times a month, you and I are going to jump on those chats, right? Those live chats that we've been doing, and those will live after the fact as a VanCast episode a couple times a month. I had so much fun doing those, and I thought we were really just scratching the surface of the potential of that medium, particularly after free agency when I was still recovering in a Montreal hotel room from COVID, and we had Kevin Bieksa drinking wine with us for 90 minutes. Like, that was a highlight of my season. It was so fun. I want to do more of that. So we're going to do a couple of those a month. And other than that, you and Harmon are going to become the standard bearers. And I just want to note, you know, and thank, like, a note of thanks to the VIPs who have listened to the VanCast over the course of the past 3 years. You know, this show, which started with me and J-Pat and our producer, Jeff Demet, you know, that was like our original triforce working on this show. We worked really hard, did two episodes during the pandemic. We grew during the pandemic. We did like four shows a week or every other day when I was in the bubble in Edmonton. And those were some like lonely, difficult times. And the VanCast meant a lot to me. Like, to do it meant a lot to me. To work with that team meant a lot to me. And then to get the response that we got over the years, right? To everything from the Gumbet to, you know, name that Canuck, all of the goofy gags that we came up with. You know, it honestly, the show meant a lot to me. And it was a really hard decision over the course of the summer to take something of a step back, but I had to do it for work-life balance reasons. I think if you follow my work closely enough, you might have noticed, like, I maybe was even a little more crabby than usual last season. I needed to put my life into better balance. And so this is sort of how we've decided to approach that. But, you know, I want to thank you, Farhan, for joining us last year when Jeff departed. I had a blast talking over you constantly and you know, allowing you to pretend that the Mariners don't suck. You know, that
wow,
was...
look at you. They actually have a better run differential than the Blue Jays. And when the Mariners are in the playoffs, you are going to be coming on regularly so that I can laugh at you.
I mean, they're definitely making the playoffs, but they also might. I mean, they're also going to fade here over the last 15 games with all the injuries that they've got and how their bullpen has completely flatlined.
No, for sure, 100%.
I mean, do they have Julio? No, right? Julio's out.
You told me Julio will be back. He'll be back
to the playoffs.
They were nowhere close.
They've exceeded my expectations without question. I'll own that. They're going to play. You know, a wild card game at least. They're going to be in the wild card spot. But they're not going to be hosting, and we know that they're going to fade over the last 20 games just because of their injuries and how their bullpen has trended.
We'll let you have
no. Even Mariners fans know that. I've accepted that they're good. I was actually hoping, because the Mariners always let me and everyone else down. I was really hoping that they'd hold on to that first wild card spot so that the Blue Jays could come into Seattle for that 3-game series and I could drive down. But of course, now the Mariners are fading and they can't even do that. They can't even do that for me when I finally was like, okay, you know, be in that first wild card spot so that the Blue Jays come and play a 3-game series so I can drive down. They couldn't even do that for me. The Mariners.
You'd be a lonely DC fan going down there.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
You'd be a lonely Jays fan.
There'd only be one Jays fan.
They'd be filling up. They would have restrictions on who could purchase tickets.
Absolute takeover.
It would be perfect.
Absolute takeover. Anyway.
No chance.
You know it. And so do MC.
They have had sellouts a lot during the stretch, and you'd be hard pressed. You'd be paying prime time Seahawk prices to get into a Mariner game as a Blue Jays fan.
And I'd be happy to do it because Blue Jays fans love their team. Anyway.
Well, since you're on your way out the door, we'll let you have your little slice.
Anyway, I had a blast doing the show with you, and I'm really excited to see what you and Harmon do together. You know, two of the sharpest guys covering this team. You guys are going to have awesome chemistry, I'm sure, right off the bat, and I think the VanCast is going to be in great hands. And of course, for those of you upset to see me leave, you know, I'm going to be on. There's been no announcement yet. So for now, you know, Canucks Hour is coming back. Canucks Hour Extended actually launches today. So it's a 2-hour show today. And through the rest of this week, we'll be going live from training camp and expect an announcement on the plans for Canucks Hour Extended in the coming days, or it might take a week. But it's nigh, like it's coming soon. So, you know, check out Canucks Hour on your podcast feed, subscribe, you'll be able to track me there, you know, for at least an hour a day, every day, Monday to Friday. And of course we appreciate your support of The Athletic. We appreciate your support of The Athletic Vancouver, of the work me and Harm do on the writing side. It's meant so much to me to do the VanCast, and to have your support and the way that this show was received in this market when I returned back in 2019. And you know, I'm excited to keep engaging with you guys in that sort of live room format that I've come to really fall in love with at The Athletic. Those will be with me and Farhan. We'll have Harmon drop by here and there. But now while we've got the three of us, right? While we've got the new Triforce, sorry, Domet. Let's talk Canucks for a minute.
Yeah, let's do it. You guys were in Penticton, right? So for me, I haven't had a chance, as you saw in the promo, right? Like, there's certain things I do and there's certain things I don't do. And going up to a prospects tournament is just not something I do while it's still football season. So you guys had a chance to go and be regaled and wowed by some of these young guys. So let's start there before we get into your expectations of this team.
So I want to ask, I'm going to interview Harmon for a sec. Harmon, good take or bad take? The Canucks prospect team played really well. Does this mean that all the smoke about the Canucks having a weak prospect system is overblown?
Bad take. Dretzer, you know this.
Why? Explain it.
Well,
for starters, I mean, we went through the math and we looked at it and I can't believe you set me up to be Mr. Negative right off the top. My first words on the VADcast. But no, in all seriousness, obviously, I mean, Canucks have an older side and you look at, and we actually did this looking at the U20 and U21 talent and the number of players. Canucks had an older team with Carlson and Oman and Baines and a lot of these guys that have spent extensive time playing pro, whether it be in Sweden or in the American League. I'm really glad that they performed well and they exceeded my expectations by winning those couple of games and being competitive through till the end, through till at least the third period against Edmonton. And while there were some impressive individual performances, some guys that have definitely landed on my radar, I don't think it all of a sudden changes the landscape for the Canucks' prospect pipeline.
What about Klimovich, though? You've got a 19-year-old in Klimovich who was, for me, their best player at the tournament. Did he show you anything that changes how you regard him or even just changes a little bit how you regard his upside?
He did, honestly, because I look back at his rookie season and because it was such a challenging learning curve with Klimovich, we rarely see an 18-year-old sort of stick in the AHL, especially someone coming over from Belarus, learning a new language, the culture shock of that, new teammates adjusting to the North American style. I think everybody expected some level of inconsistency, highs and lows, and we kind of saw that in his first year. So after that, it was a matter of, and when Ryan Johnson came on the podcast towards the end of last season, he mentioned, hey, I'm expecting a big year from Klimovich, a substantial sort of breakout now that he's kind of got his feet wet already in year one. And so going into this tournament, especially because the competition level, it's a mix of American League guys, but also junior level players. So it's a little bit lower than what you get from a typical AHL environment. I wanted to see Klimovich have a couple of standout performances, and I think the first game was a little bit quiet, but in the last two, he was dominant, and you saw the high ceiling potential if everything hits. Obviously, he's a big body, he's got tremendous hands, and the thing that I really liked in the last couple of games was his playmaking and the way that he was able to sort of see the ice, which hasn't always been a strength of his game, consistently find the back door, both at 5-on-5 and the power play. And obviously he set up a gorgeous assist, but also he was just finding that seam again and again. And that to me was, we saw that in flashes in Abbotsford in little spurts, but really, even though there is still so many raw parts of his game and he's got to improve sometimes his decision-making and obviously, defensively, there's still a lot of work to be done. I came away from this tournament looking at Klimovich and being like, okay, still got a lot of work to do rounding out his game. But for a 19-year-old to play this well, I look at him outside of Lekkerimäki as the Canucks' a prospect is having the highest ceiling as a potential impact contributor if everything hits.
Yeah, I mean, we ranked him right before the tournament behind Jack Rathbone, third in the Canucks system. Did he show you enough that you'd consider wondering, like, did we get that right? Did we get that right, Harmon?
We'll find out
I think we got it wrong, man. I'm going to be honest with you. I was impressed enough that I think we got it wrong. I think Klimovich's upside, I think I was sleeping a little bit on Klimovich's upside. Like, I think the upside there probably is enough to present a pretty good case for him as the second prospect in the system.
Yeah, on an upside basis, for sure, especially because Rathbone's obviously on the older side as a prospect. He's got less runway to develop and grow. But either way, we're going to find out within the next month or so anyway, because for Rathbone, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's a make or break, but it's time. Like, he has to.
It's do or die time. Yeah, it is. You're right.
If he's going to be anything at the NHL level, anything meaningful beyond just a depth role guy, he's going to show it this season. Like, it's that age for him, as opposed to Klimovich, who's what, like almost 4 years younger. And for him to stick at the American League level last year and show the flashes that he did, and in this tournament look a cut above at times relative to the rest of his peers, that was enormously impressive. And again, it's just, it's really rare to see a guy who's that big, has that kind of hands. He needs to improve his skating, but he, as a baseline, moves pretty well. It's not as if he, as if his pace is an obvious issue. And to kind of see that, all right, he's got some playmaking upside too. Like that's a really tantalizing package.
I think his playmaking is more advanced than his shot. I think we've talked a lot about his shot. I think the market's talked a lot about his shot. I've heard a lot about his shot from industry sources. I watched that shot, and for, in terms of the selection, in terms of the accuracy, I think there's a lot of work actually to be done there. Whereas seeing the pop passes, you know, obviously his natural attacking instincts are pretty special. You know, I think about that play where he, you know, adjusted his route to the outside, cut inside, nutmegs Tyrell Bauer, the Winnipeg Jets mature prospect. You know, that's like a really nice attacking move, used his A-frame well. There's a lot to like, but the shot's not accurate yet. It's hard. He has good attacking instincts, but he also shoots from bad angles a lot, like a lot. I think the playmaking's more advanced than the shot, which was something I wasn't expecting before those three live viewings.
Yeah, I didn't expect it either. Again, I saw spurts of it in Abbotsford, like one of the games that I was at last year. I remember him getting in on the forecheck. And that's the other part, too, is because he's such a physical specimen, if he can become more assertive away from the puck and really up his work rate, he can do plays like last year where he gets in on the forecheck, wins a battle, and right from below the goal line makes a quick pop pass right into the slot. And that ended up being the assist on the game tying goal for Abbotsford in that contest. And plays like that really sort of opened my eye. But that's where, of course, you are going to need to see some improvement in. There are situations where he could continue to use his passing more. And we remember looking at a 2-on-1 rush in the first game, for example, where he had a bad angle to shoot from, but he had a teammate on the 2-on-1 that he could have slid across, and he went for the shot instead. But when he sort of evaluates his options, he can get from point A to point B, and he's really good east-west specifically, which is the most dangerous type of passing, right? To get a goalie moving in his crease across like that, it's a really challenging shot to stop if you can sort of have that pre-shot movement.
Linus, right, guys, Carlson.
Listen, I'm going to cut you off because we only have a certain amount of time with Drancer. Harm, I will ask you about some of these other prospects on the other side, because Drancer's going to go and go and go, and then we're going to be... I got to get Drancer's takes on this team this season so we have them on the record. So that, you know, because you know Drancer, right? Like, if you say it long enough, eventually it becomes right. So we got to get your early takes right now on what this thing is going to look like so Demet can save this receipt.
Okay, let's go.
All right, let's go. Tell me how this team finishes. Are we going to see a Canuck team in the playoffs?
I think it's close. Like, I think it's a pick 'em. You know, I honestly would weight it as like 45% chance to make the playoffs, 55% chance to miss. And so, you know, like if I had to say it today, and I want to be clear, I want to wait to see how training camp goes a little bit. You know, I think the Canucks are still weighing their options on the back end. You know, it wouldn't shock me at all if the Canucks had kicked the tires pretty strenuously on Lindqvist or Lundqvist, who moved to Dallas for a first round pick, and judged that price was too high. I saw Ian McIntyre report the Ethan Bear thing, right? So I'm pretty confident that they're going to do what they can to upgrade this defensive group further, use the waiver wire, potentially try to move out one of those middle class contracts. Like, those are all things I'm still expecting the Canucks to work on before the start of the season. So I want to see what they can accomplish in that area. Bruce Boudreau, no one's ever made a lick of money betting against Bruce Boudreau in the regular season. And, you know, I do think the vibes here, I do think the talent here, I do think the goaltending here, I do think the power play here, like, that should be enough to get into the playoffs. I just don't have a good enough sense of Vegas, right? Like, Vegas could be an 85-point team or they could be a 115-point team, and neither outcome would surprise me, right? Like, they're such a wild card here. And the Kings, I think, are improved and so fast north-south, but I'm just not sure if they're going to be able to sustain what they did last year unless they score more. But there's a lot of things that could go right for them with Fiala added to their attack and then a ton of forwards. Like, I won't be stunned if Quinton Byfield's a really good, like, 45, 50-point forward next year. And if he is, they're in the playoffs, for sure. So, you know, it's almost, for me, less about Vancouver and more about what happens around them. Because I think Vancouver should be better than they were last year, in the mid-90s to like, you know, I'd put their range as, like, 94 to 98 points. That's sort of, well, that's a pretty narrow range. Let's go 94 to 100 points. That's where I expect the Canucks to be. And that, you know, should make the playoffs, except the playoff bar was 98 points in the West. Like, it was 98 points in the West last year. So, you know, they're in a division with two of the teams that I expect to be among the worst in the league, in San Jose and Arizona, right? They're going to, all of the Pacific Division teams are going to fatten up on those guys. Plus Seattle, if Seattle doesn't get goaltending a lot better than they got last year. You know, I won't be stunned to see five playoff teams from the Pacific Division at the end of the season. And so, you know, I see the Canucks as a fringe playoff team. I see them as a strong contender for a wild card spot. And I'm really reluctant to make a playoff pick today. You know, I want to see how training camp unfolds. I want to see how the vibes look. I want to see what else they do before the season begins.
The vibes.
No, you know what? Last year, Farhan and Harmon will back me up here, because I wasn't super public about it because I didn't want to be a jerk out the gate. But as training camp unfolded and as the Sutter and Hamonic weirdness really set in, and as I watched the team throughout camp and the Brady Keeper injury and just like sort of observed it. And again, Harmon will back me up because he watches every practice with me and I talk throughout them. You know, I became convinced that this team was hosed, right? Because of the penalty kill, I was like, this is going to be a disaster. And I thought that, and I knew that pretty with a good level of confidence before the season began. And for 25 games anyway, that was dead on. I should have been more explicit about it, but I was taking so many bullets in the market for being negative already. I didn't want to leave the team for dead before the season.
And for being a Blue Jay fan. Okay, so now we know what
I want to see the vibes. I want to see the vibes.
All right. I never thought I'd hear you, you know, being an analytics guy, talk vibes, but okay, we'll go there. I love it. Before we let you go quickly, Bo Horvat, what's the latest there?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty close to the vest. You know, we've dealt with these before with Pat Morris and the Canucks on the Markstrom front. Here's what I would say. I would say there was optimism early in this summer about a framework, a mutually acceptable framework for what a deal could look like once they got down to brass tacks. Now, once they got down to brass tacks, they couldn't get to a place where the team was comfortable closing the deal. But the fact that there was a comfort level early in the summer suggests to me that there was at no point an opening offer that would have offended Bo Horvat, right? With Morris, typically speaking, these things don't get very dramatic or personal, right? I think the Markstrom offers from the Canucks were really low, and that was never a problem in terms of Markstrom's role on the team or how he performed or how he tried to play through injury in the bubble, right? Like, I will be stunned. The thing that would surprise me the most about this is if there's any source of, like, any real tension or unhappiness going into training camp, regardless of whether or not this is resolved this week or not. That I'm very skeptical about. And I'm very skeptical about the idea that the Canucks would have begun negotiations with a low number, even if a deal in the high fives would be sort of in line with where the center market evolved to this summer with the Trocheck and Strome deals, right? You know, I would be surprised if that was sort of the number that they'd started with, since both sides for sure felt pretty comfortable and confident early on in the summer. Early on this summer, there was a lot of confidence. That to me suggests that there wasn't an opening number that would have bothered Bo Horvat. So that's my basic read on the situation. I think that with Miller done, the Canucks are unlikely to move aggressively to close the way that they did with both Besser and Miller. And so I won't be shocked if this drags out a little bit. I would be a little bit surprised if a deal was done this week, and we'll see where it goes. But I would also be flabbergasted if there was real tension going into training camp at this juncture.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Bo handles it relative to how Pettersson and Quinn Hughes have handled it, relative to how JT Miller handled all the discussion around his future and potential trades during last season.
Yeah, there's less discussion, though. There's less discussion. Like, Miller, the Miller trade thing was, no one ever shut up about it, you know, and no, me included.
But that's, there's less discussion today, but that's going to change as we go here if things don't get done. And certainly, I believe that there's less pressure. The organization believes there's less pressure on themselves to get Bo done because JT is done. Because there was a real fear of potentially losing both. That fear is gone. So, in your words, they're not going to aggressively move to close like they would have had JT not been done. I think that's very accurate in this particular situation. So, we'll see where it goes.
Well,
we'll
see.
Once the regular season starts, right? I mean, if we don't have this done at the start of the regular season, people are going to talk about it more. Just the way it works in this marketplace.
Well, and I think they're going to try and move money still, right? Like, they're going to keep trying to move money. Now, they're not going to be able to move money for nothing. Like, they're not going to be able to move money without taking money back. But if you can move a 2-year deal and take back a 1-year deal, right? That from the perspective of Bo Horvat talks, that does change things, right? No question. So, you know, I won't be stunned if they, you know, change their tune on moving to close either based on what they can accomplish on the trade market over the next 6 months. I know they've been very conservative. You know, do you remember there used to be a phrase in this market, Stan Pat Quinn, when he wasn't very busy? and then there was Stay Still Gill. Well, we can do Stan Pat Alvin. Like, it's been a very conservative start to the Alvin era. But, you know, this is still a team with Jim Rutherford as the president of hockey operations, right? Like, don't be surprised if there's some gunslinging at some point here. And, you know, if there is, that could open up some money for a Horvat extension, and that could maybe change their stance in terms of moving aggressively to close. So what we're going to see, I heard Friedman report that there wasn't a ton of progress. That's probably right. I mean, Friedman always knows his stuff. So, you know, I'd be pretty surprised if we got a deal quickly, but I'd be more surprised if there was any real source of tension in the lead up to training camp. Just considering how this has played out, over the course of the summer, the optimism that existed originally and the way that Pat Morris of Newport Sports, who represents Bo Horvat, typically operates, which is, you know, tends to be pretty drama free, even when negotiations are full contact behind the scenes.
All right, good stuff. Listen, we're going to let you go. Again, Drancer will make regular appearances on the live room, which we'll probably do maybe every couple of weeks. I think we're looking to get our first live room in at some point next week. So we'll get you posted on that. And that should be a lot of fun. But hey, buddy, thanks for doing this. We will see you at the rink. And good luck with your show. And good luck to the Mariners. And we hate the Blue Jays. This is officially a Jays free zone now.
Hey, you guys have fun together. Take care of my baby. Take care of the VanCast. Take care of the VIPs. Stick with these guys. These guys are two of the best. I love these guys, and I'm excited to listen myself as you guys get going. So best of luck to you. You know, a blessing to you both, and a big thank you to Jeff Demet behind the scenes, an indispensable part of the VanCast, and now the last surviving original member of the program. Domet is close to my heart. He's done a fabulous job, and he'll still be pushing the buttons and keeping you guys on the rails. So with Domet involved, I know it'll be good. Plus you guys are there and you guys are the best too. So best of luck to the three of you.
Thanks, Trent. So I'll be sure to keep on your Blue Jays legacy here.
Let's go.
Blue Jays over Mariners.
I can't have Demet do the show because he's in the Eastern time zone, so I'll have to figure that out too.
You like most Mariners fans in Vancouver, Farhan, you continue to be hopelessly outnumbered.
This is the year all of that changes.
No chance.
All right, we'll let you have the last laugh and maniacal laugh and out the door.
Cheers, bud. Bye.
All right, that's how I had to get him out. That's how I had to get rid of Jay's talk. Because, I can talk over Harm. I can't talk over Drancer.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, Drancer, I know you guys got deep into Danila Klimovich, but there were a few other names I wanted to ask
you. Did you just call me Drancer?
Yeah, that was going to happen at some point. Wasn't the first. Probably won't be the last.
Oh my
because
God.
I've got this natural twitch Drancer's given to me when he's talked over me. So, I apologize. You're much better looking. You've got more hair on the top of your head. your laugh is less maniacal. So, hey, look, don't take offense. Other than the fact that you're a Blue Jay fan, you're nothing like Drancer. So you know, you can't even be a legitimate Blue Jay fan because you weren't even born when they won the World Series. So don't even go there with me. But I apologize. We'll work through this together, my friend. We will work through this together. But you do need to come up with your own, you know, your buzzwords, right? Because we already got industry sources in the last segment. You know, all the pretentious Drance lines. So you're going to have to come up with your own pretentious Harmon lines. So it becomes easier for me to just to not have that nervous twitch.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to come up with something. It's a high leverage play here for me to come up with my own terms. So,
because clearly anything can happen.
I agreed.
Anything can happen. All right, let's get into the tournament a little bit more. And before we dive into training camp, but Linus Karlsson. You know, I know that from the clips that I've seen and from the, you know, reports that I've read that he actually looked very good. And the reason I ask about him is because he's a little bit older, and we always talk about those guys that are going to be the next guys to get the call up. And I'm not sure that Danila Klimovich is going to be the first guy to get the call up when they need a top nine forward, but Linus Karlsson could be. What'd you make of his performance?
Yeah, I mean, if you watched it strictly from the perspective of did he play well at the tournament, 100% he did. And I think we saw a lot of attributes that will translate really well at the North American pro level in terms of his two-way details and how the way he's just able to positionally stay above the puck, the reads that he's able to make. He's always in the right spot, always takes very smart angles and routes. And that's an important thing if you're not exactly a burner, is being able to take efficient routes to close time and space. In addition to that, he showed some soft skills as well. I mean, there was one play in one of the games where he had a backhand pass through the legs to set up a scoring chance, and there were flashes of skill here and there. And the other thing that stands out about him is just he's such a beast at protecting the puck through traffic, which again is important because when you don't have a separation gear as a skater, you're going to be under duress. Guys are going to close quickly on you. So you're going to need to know how to position your body, use your strength to kind of keep defenders off of your back. Now, in having said all of that and in having recognized that he scored a couple goals, overall looked really good, I still can't get over the fact that he looked a little slow skating-wise at the tournament because, again, the competition level there was a mix of AHL and junior, and his stride really looked labored there. And I worry that when we're talking about the NHL and the pace ramps up significantly compared to what we saw at Penticton Youngstars, I still think we're going to need to see significant progress in Karlsson's skating for him to be able to make an impact. Because even there were moments where he looked a little bit uncomfortable making plays in open ice. There were a couple of neutral zone sequences where the starts and stops in particular, he'd be a little bit slow off his feet and he might turn a puck over or something. And I worry about how that's going to translate, because everything else, you see so many NHL qualities in his game. But if you can't skate, if you can't move, then the other parts aren't going to matter. And so We'll see how much that can progress in Abbotsford. If it does, if he continues to make strides in his skating, then he could be a viable sort of second half depth recall sort of option. But right now, I was left a little bit disappointed by his skating.
Let's fast forward. There were a few other names I wanted to ask you about, Archdeep Baines, among others, but let's fast forward into training camp. Is there any young players that aren't on the obvious when we put together our depth chart? So I'm not talking about a Will Lockwood. Number one, is there room? Because I don't think there is. I think the organization is so set with who they've brought in. I don't think there's really room for a young player that we're not currently talking about to make this team. Do you see any of these guys knocking on the door for day one?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think in terms of the guys at the tournament, I think Oman could be interesting. He didn't really have a standout tournament, but when you look at the qualities of his game, I think he's a little bit more ready to potentially make an impact right away. Because here's the other thing about Oman, and it surprised me a little bit. He's a lot bigger than I would have thought. Like, he looks just as big as Carlson, which is a significant asset. But the key differentiating factor is he moves well. He gets up and down the ice fast. And the ceiling for Oman isn't as high as it is for Carlson, because Carlson's such... He was such a prolific goal scorer in Sweden, and Oman just doesn't have that robust offensive game in him. But if we're talking about challenging for a depth role, I think Oman has more translatable qualities right away. But definitely, I mean, he's still on the outside looking in. And if we're talking about sort of dark horses that could surprise at training camp and maybe contend for a spot, I mean, I'd more so be looking at a guy like Sheldon Dries, who in his cup of coffee last season at the NHL, He impressed me. He looked like a guy who, in that sample at least, stuck out really well. He's obviously a little bit on the smaller side, but the way he's got this nonstop motor. He closed on pucks really quickly. Seemed to drive play a little bit, and despite not being the biggest guy, he played a little bit more of a physical style. So I wonder if Dries can carry the momentum from last season. But I mean, you look at the numbers game, there's just so much competition for the fourth line right now, right? You've got Dakota Joshua, who, when you have an organization commit multiple years of term and a one-way commitment for a fringe sort of NHL, AHL sort of bubble guy, that shows you right off the bat that they really strongly believe that he's an NHLer. So I think Joshua's got an inside track right now. In terms of fourth line spot, we'll see what happens with Dickinson, right? He's still an NHL body. There's Dries, even down to guys like DiGiuseppe and Dowling. There's just so much competition that when you discuss some of the guys that played at the prospect tournament, I think it's going to be tough for them to challenge. The one standout that I really want to mention, though, Tristan Nielsen. I think he's going to take some time, but he was such a standout in the first couple of games. He's got some Antoine Roussel to his game, man. The way that he's just this firecracker on the ice, ball of energy, really annoying to play against. He's got some underrated skill. I wonder if he could get an ELC down the line, but right now when I look at guys at that tournament that could contend for an NHL spot out of camp right away, I just think there's too much competition.
Yeah, I agree with you. And when you look at names like Dowling and Dries and DiGiuseppe, I mean, I don't see any of those guys in the opening day roster, which means they're going to be knocking at the door to always be available. And they're the easy solution to plug in for 2 to 3 games, right? You know, especially in a bottom line role. As I look at the roster, as we transition a little bit into training camp, a couple names I want to throw at you. And the one, see, like I look at a player like, you know, like I said, I'd mentioned earlier, a guy like Will Lockwood as somebody who could, with his skill set, I think could be a really good fourth liner coming out of the gate and be a regular contributor for this team. And then, you know, it depends on who they kind of deem the 13th forward, because I think we all know who the top nine are, right? The one name that I want to get into a little bit before we take our next break is Nils Höglander. Now, when you look at who they've signed and when you look at how last season ended and when you look at what's projected to be a top nine, I don't know that I see Nils Höglander there. If you're projecting what's going to happen right now, does Nils Höglander have a spot to win or a spot to lose? Like, what's got to happen for him to stay with the big club? Because quite honestly, if I was betting today, I think Nils Höglander has got to have an incredible camp and preseason to stay with the big club. I think there's a real chance that he winds up getting sent down to start the season.
Agreed. I'm with you there. And there's a couple of factors at play. Number one is you've got to remember the first impression that he had on the coaching staff, because while we still vividly remember what Höglander was capable of in his rookie season, sort of making the team out of camp right away and being this top six force from day one and playing difficult minutes alongside Bo Horvat, Bruce Boudreau wouldn't have been around for that. And obviously he'll have known about it. He'll have had conversations about it. But Boudreau's first impression of Höglander was what we saw last season. And let's make no mistake about it. As much as I like Nils Höglander, as much as I'm high on his ceiling, and as much as I adamantly refute the idea that they should ever sort of trade low on him when names like Ethan Bear, for example, pop up, that was not a good first impression that he had on Boudreau last season. We saw the minutes decline significantly, because when you remember the first sort of week of games when Boudreau took over, Höglander and Podkolzin were right up there in terms of leading the team in ice time. Boudreau was giving them an early opportunity. Podkolzin obviously got his opportunities as the season went on, but Höglander, with his, I think, defensive mishaps and not being able to bury chances and some bounces going against him, he wasn't able to create enough offense. There were too many defensive warts to where he just kept sliding down the lineup. And there was a long stretch where he was 12th or 13th among Canucks forwards in average ice time. So you have that sort of level of deployment, which already tells you something. And then you add a bunch of bodies to that equation with Mikheyev and Kuzmenko and Podkolzin taking another step. It's going to be really tough, especially because the second element is, it's not just that Höglander has to fit in the top nine. It's that he plays a specific sort of identity or role that isn't you're going to have to accommodate it, is kind of what I mean. I'm sure Boudreau looks at Höglander right now and says, with his defensive game, he probably needs to be in a little bit more of a sheltered role. He's not sort of player that I can have on any line. He's obviously undersized as well. And so for that reason, there are guys like, for example, an Andrei Kuzmenko probably also needs to be sheltered. And you can only have so many wingers that you need to deploy carefully in your top nine, especially when you also look at, like, for example, Connor Garland sort of plays a similar style as this undersized, really crafty, great on his edges sort of winger. Is like, you don't have, you're going to have to accommodate. And when you think of potential line combinations as well, like a lot of people look at, for example, Tanner Pearson and say, well, couldn't Höglander step up and sort of beat out Pearson? And maybe that's a possibility if he has a monster camp. The problem that I see with that is Pearson is just so versatile, and he is one of the rare wingers on this roster right now that Boudreau will be able to trust in a matchup role in hard minutes, that Boudreau can trust that Pearson can play on any line and that he can be a reliable defensive piece, which is important because when you look at a guy like, for example, JT Miller, and you're thinking about which wingers could potentially fit best with him, we know Miller is prolific offensively, but we also know that that playing the middle, just because he hasn't had as much experience doing it over the last three seasons, he can have his defensive shortcomings. And if you're a coaching staff, you're going to be way more comfortable playing Pearson in that sort of role, knowing that he can make up for some of those make up for some of those defensive inconsistencies. And guys like Pearson, who just never make a mistake, who never turn the puck over at the offensive blue line, who always get the puck out along the walls in the defensive zone, who always track back on the back check, they just always seem to get more rope with coaches. So for that reason, I think Höglander's in really tough. And if he doesn't crack the top nine, then I think the best spot is for him to be in the American League.
Going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into a couple of these other forwards and also the possibility of Quinn Hughes playing on the right side.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So before we get to Quinn Hughes, what are your biggest battles that you're watching right now going into camp?
Well, it's not necessarily a battle so much outside of, I mean, we talked about the fourth line a little bit. And I think with the, I mean, if we talk about the forward group for a second here, I'm more interested to see, like, I think it's a battle to just get into the top nine. It's not necessarily about a battle to play with this specific center on this specific line necessarily that you'd be gunning for if you're one of the forwards, one of the scoring forwards trying to make an impact, because the team's just deeper. I mean, if you look at this Canucks lineup right now up front, and you've got, which we expect, Miller, Pettersson, and Horvat down the middle, it doesn't matter if you're on line one, it doesn't matter if you're on line three. As long as you're inside the top nine, you're going to be in a great spot to create offense. All three of those lines, I think, are going to play relatively even minutes. There isn't this stratified top six, bottom six sort of environment that there has been in years past, right? Because I look at, for example, training camp in 2021, and it was like Nils Höglander had to make the top six or had to win the spot next to Horvat, because if he didn't, the bottom six was just constructed in this much shallower way, where it was like offense is top six, bottom six is strictly defense. Whereas now you've got a third line that is going to be dynamic, that is going to create a lot of offense, that's going to have a lot of talent on it. And so if you're one of the wingers, whether you're a Höglander or you're a Pearson or you're a Kuzmenko, a Pearson, and you're trying to jockey for spots, it's just get into the top nine and you'll be in a great spot. So I think that's what makes it unique. And I think the real battles will more so be on the fourth line with fourth line wings with some of the names that we mentioned. On the back end, I'm going to be really interested to see, though, how exactly things shake out. And can Jack Rathbone find a way to crack? I mean, he's going to crack the opening night roster, I think. But is he going to be able to crack the top six right away on the back end? And I think part of that will hinge, as I'm sure we'll discuss, on whether a right side defender like OEL or Hughes or Dermott shifts over to the right side, because as it stands right now on the left side with Hughes, OEL, and Dermott, I don't think Rathbone's better than one of those guys right now unless he has a monster camp. So it's going to be, I'm going to be interested to see how Rathbone performs and whether he can find a way to force Boudreau to make a tough decision in the top six on the back end.
Yeah, so I mean, for me staying up front, I mean, if you're looking at the top nine, I mean, we can see it on paper that it's already going to be Pettersson, Horvat, Besser, Miller, Garland, Mikheyev, Pearson, Kuzmenko, Podkolzin is nine there. And, you know, can Höglander crack that nine? Well, you know, we'll see what happens in camp. You know, and I don't believe he's going to. I think there's a big percentage of the organization that believes he would be better served by playing heavy minutes in every role. And Jim Rutherford has that history of kind of letting guys over-ripen a little bit at the American Hockey League level. It also helps him from a contract perspective because he's going into his third year of the entry-level deal. It deflates that number a little bit as well. So, you know, I think they probably want to put him in that role. And then if there's an injury, they can automatically bring him up and insert him into a top nine role if he shows what he can do down below. You know, then you've got names like, you know, four guys I think that are battling for that. For the bottom spot and the 13th forward potentially are Dickinson and Lazar, along with Lockwood and who am I missing? Dakota Joshua, right? So I think those are kind of the easy things on paper right now. Can somebody knock off one of those guys?
Dowling? I don't think Lockwood's as strong of a contender for a spot as you think he is.
Well, like, again, I mean, he could wind up being the 13th guy, although that's not necessarily the spot you want a young player in. But I think he's got a great opportunity. You know, there's a spot for him to win there. He doesn't need an out-of-body experience
to win a
fourth-line spot on this team.
The biggest reason is because he doesn't have the versatility right now to kill penalties. And if you're a guy who does not provide special teams value on either side, it's a lot more challenging, especially because when you looked at some of the parts of Lockwood's game last season, I loved how fast he was. I loved how physical he was. But watching him make plays in the defensive zone off the wall and trying to orchestrate breakouts reliably, I just didn't see enough consistency there. And so for me, I think the fact that they added so much depth says a lot about how they view Lockwood, in my opinion.
Yeah, but the other thing is that I don't think Bruce Boudreau is afraid to play some of those players in penalty killing roles, right? Like, you don't need your fourth line player to play on the power play, obviously. So it just comes down to whether or not you can kill penalties and whether, you know, like, pick a name, right? I mean, we saw it with Pettersson last year. We've seen it with Horvat. We've seen it with Miller. You know, Mikheyev's done a bit of it. Pearson obviously can kill penalties. If Dickinson's on the roster, he can kill penalties. Lazar, like, I think they've got enough options with six forwards that they feel comfortable about that I'm not sure that it's going to be as dependent as maybe as it was under Travis Green, right? Where you had to be that guy because he just wasn't going to put the other players in harm's way. I think Boudreau's not afraid to do that, right? And when you talk about his size and his speed, they need more of that. And they need more of that in their fourth line, right? If they want that energy piece. So I don't think it's as far-fetched, you know, having had some conversations with management on the topic. Again, I'm not telling you he's going to make it or he's a slam dunk, but I don't think that if they believe he can do more for them on a fourth line, that all of a sudden he's going to be shelved behind a Dowling or a Dries or a DiGiuseppe because they might believe he's got more penalty killing utility, because I'm not sure those guys necessarily get thrown into that role as well. Right. So I don't know. I don't think it's the stretch you think it is.
That's fair. I mean, I still think that he has long odds just because there's so much competition. And when a guy has very limited offensive upside and he's not great defensively, even if we remove the penalty killing factor and we just
we're talking about a fourth line role. We're talking about a fourth line role. Can he be an energy type player?
You still got to be able to be responsible defensively. So, I mean, we'll see, right? I think it's a good point that you brought up in that PK utility doesn't matter as much as it would have last season, where it was essential. But I still think that he's got to show more than just being fast and being able to add a physical presence.
Well, you're right. He's going to have to show that he's at least improved in one end of the ice, right? That either there's a little bit more there offensively, or he's a little bit more responsible defensively. But I don't think he's got to go out and be perfect. I don't think he's got to go out and score, you know, 3 goals and 5 points in the preseason. I don't think that has to happen. But yeah, you're right. He does need to show a step. Any young player, you know, Jack Rathbone included, even though he's certainly got a spot to lose versus the other way around, I think they've all got to show that they've improved in a key area. And I think Will Lockwood's going to be able to show that. I just don't think he needs to hit an absolute home run like Nils Höglander did 2 years ago to make this team. I think he's got a little bit more of a, I think he's got a little bit more room. And again, I don't think he's got a spot given to him, but you know, I don't know that, like I said, all of a sudden a Dowling or a DiGiuseppe or a Dries is all of a sudden everybody's going to be that comfortable with him that they're going to throw him in. I think there's a spot there to be won is my point, whereas I don't know that there's a spot in the top nine to be won based on contracts and what we saw from certain players last year. I think it's going to be much harder for Höglander to make it than it is necessarily for Will Lockwood to make it, given their top nine role versus bottom line role. But like I said, both players are going to need to show a certain level of improvement. Let's talk a little bit about Quinn. There's two defensemen I want to talk about before we go here. Quinn Hughes and Tucker Poolman. What are you hearing and what are your expectations for Poolman? Because it appears he's going to be on the ice day one.
Yeah, I think, and they're linked together, right? Because Poolman's health status, if he's healthy and the Canucks believe that he's ready to play, they're all of a sudden deeper on the right side. And then I think there's a less of a chance that Hughes would shift over to the right side. And so I think one of the first things to sort of keep an eye on, one of the priorities that I suspect the coaching staff will have, is to test out Poolman in a bunch of different roles, to push him a little bit and see, hey, is this guy ready? Is he going to be healthy? Can we rely on him in an important role? And I think from there, they're going to have to then make a decision with what happens with Hughes. Now, I think the one thing to keep in mind is that whatever happens in training camp, we need to be careful about how closely we read into the D pairings. Just because training camp can sometimes, when you have, say, the back end, and you've got so many different options in terms of guys that you can shift to the left or right, a lot of different combinations, a lot of different possibilities that you have to account for depending on the health status of guys. When you have that sort of environment, NHL teams can sort of look at camp as a great opportunity to experiment and just put guys in different roles that would be plan B or C options. And I'll give you an example. I was talking to someone in the league last week, and they said, and they were talking about another NHL team, and they mentioned that, hey, they know a player on that roster who can play both wing and center, and that team is going to play that forward at center in training camp. Now, if you read into that as an outside observer looking at training camp, you're going to go, wow, okay, so they're going to play that forward at center. But no, what's happened there is that player was already told by the team, hey, we're going to try you at center in training camp, but in reality, we're going to start the season with you on the wing. That's just so you get some experience there if we have to turn to you there midseason. I wonder if that's the sort of dynamic that the club has with Quinn Hughes in terms of getting him some reps there in training camp and preseason, just so it's an option throughout the season, depending on how things unfold. And it was interesting too, Farhan, you were there at the golf tournament yesterday. Hearing Hughes talk about playing the right side, it seemed like to him, the impression was he seemed to talk about it more as like a part-time thing, and it's an option totally, as opposed to, all right, that's what I'm expecting this season is to shift over permanently. So that's the one.
He made a point of talking about his relationship with Luke Shen as well, right? And how Luke Shen stabilized his game and how much he's looking forward to playing with him. And yeah, you're 100% right. It didn't seem like the slam dunk that this could be a full-time option. But, you know, Travis Dermott has also shown an ability to play on the right side. And to me, if they want to get Jack Rathbone in this lineup, I don't think that should be a completely foreign thought. And I, you know, I don't see why it's offensive that Travis Dermott could be your seventh defenseman, right? That has that flexibility to bounce in and out. And you could, you know, we've talked about this before, that Luke Shen could be a player that could potentially help integrate Jack Rathbone into the lineup. And he could move and play certain shifts with Quinn Hughes and play certain shifts with Rathbone, depending on what you're going to wind up getting out of Tucker Poolman. But yeah, I totally agree with you. He viewed it as more of a part-time thing, more of an option than necessarily a permanent change to his career, which some of us were looking at it as when we first saw the possibility of it. But listen, we're going to have so much time to talk about Quinn Hughes. Really excited for training camp. Looking forward to getting into that as well. And looking forward to working with you, my man. So this should be a fun season. You know, come up with a maniacal laugh, would you?
No chance. But I will press on the Blue Jays, and I probably will press on the fact with our age difference, and I'll definitely be cracking some jokes about the CFL being irrelevant. I'll tell you that with the under 50 crowd, I've got those shots ready.
All right, we'll have fun with that one. Listen, if you're looking for other pod options, Mike Greer, the general manager of the San Jose Sharks, is Craig Custance and Sean Gentile's guest this week on the Athletic Hockey Show. Bill Daly, meanwhile, the NHL's deputy commissioner, joins the Wednesday roundtable this week with Mike Russo, Jesse Granger, and Joe Smith on the Athletic Hockey Show. As for us, hey, thanks for listening to the new and improved VanCast. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to leave a rating and a review, and this offer still remains. Get annual subscriptions to The Athletic for just $1 a month for 6 months when you visit theathletic.com/VanCast. Our show returns next week with Harm and I, and plus Drancer and I will be hosting a live room next week, so be on the lookout for that. For Harmon and Drancer, I'm Farhan. Thanks for listening to The VanCast.